Greetings. Hey guys. Okay, we have a quorum. I will now call the meeting to order. We have a roll call, I guess. Jim Couts.
Chris Meyer. Janice Van Wyke.
Don, are you still there?
Yes, absolutely. Don Meeks.
Okay, thank you. Let's dispense with formalities and approve the minutes from last month.
I move that we approve the minutes from last month.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Good. Thank you, Don. Passed. We're going to give a public comment. Ross, why don't you? We're going to adjust the agenda here. Start with one of Ross's presentations.
Thank you. I don't have any report items in our manager's report today. Instead, we'd like to spend some time talking about the items under new business while everyone's here and have an opportunity for feedback, input, thoughts, opinions on that information. So go ahead and get started. First of all, wanted to share a few things that we're doing within parks. One of the things that I think was really, really clear to many folks at the county is, and we mentioned this at the last Parks Advisory Board member and that member meeting last month, and that was the name of our division, and that was the Parks Division for many months. But prior to that was Parks and Lands. That we had gone through this transition with what we were calling ourselves and what folks know us as externally. So we had a good conversation at the staff level. All of our entire team was invited to pitch ideas about what we might call ourselves moving forward. And so we had well over 30 submissions for ideas for our name. And the name that came out of that stuck, that resonated, is the name Parks and Nature. And so we are going by the name Parks and Nature. The goal of that, the intent behind it, is really to fully encapsulate what it is we do, that we are not just parks. We are not your typical active park like we're in right now, like Luke Jensen, a park with athletic fields and playgrounds and indoor facilities. We are that, but we're more. And so the nature portion of the new name is to capture really what we do throughout the county, and that's parks and nature. That we're natural areas, we're trails, we're rivers, we're creeks, we're lakes, and so that's the purpose behind it. So from now on, we'll be called Parks and Nature.
And we're, acronym.
Yeah.
PANS.
PANS.
So that was about it. Very good. There you go.
Yeah. So that is the that is the new name. I think there are a number of what's generally known as parks departments have a variety of different names. You see parks and community services, you see parks and recreation, you see just parks. We thought parks and nature was a good descriptor of what we do here in Clark County and a good descriptor of our future as well. So I wanted to share that out with you. Parks and libraries, yep, David Stipe mentions parks and libraries is one you see as well. And so, yeah, just reporting on that, sharing that out. The some of the other work, parks and cemeteries. Yeah, that is a function of governments. A number of governments operate cemeteries.
We have a cemetery effect, don't
we?
We
do.
Yes, we do. That's a historical event.
Yeah. So another
parks and cemeteries is not a joke. It is it's actually pretty common. when you look across the country, a lot of parks departments end up managing cemeteries. So
another part of defining what it is we do internally for our staff, for our volunteers, but also more importantly, externally, how we operate, what people think we do versus what we actually do. Part of that is being able to communicate really our core mission, what we're trying to achieve, our vision for the future, and also our core values. And so we started just in the past 3 weeks or so to define that for ourselves at the staff level internally, with the intent of having a final product that is something that we have on our desks, something that gives us focus, something that helps us decide what we are going to focus on, and more importantly, what we're not going to focus on. And so that mission, vision, core values document is in the works. And then externally, what we communicate on our website, what we communicate on social media, about what it is we're focused on and what the future vision for our park system is. So I wanted to share some of that early work, kind of the product that we have right now is our notes of our mission, vision, and core values. So these are the notes about our mission, what it is we are doing now, and what it is we think that we are accomplishing in our purpose in the community. So these are just a few of those notes. This is very early. These are the building blocks for what will become a mission statement. Wanted to share that. Focus on health and wellness, economic vitality, access to the outdoors, providing spaces to gather for social connections, facilities and places to exercise, community health and wellness, again, self-worth, satisfaction individually, but also collectively, giving back and providing opportunities for service and opportunities and places for people to serve the county, for social interaction and sustainability, stewardship and resiliency. And that's really our purpose, our mission. And that will be, all of these terms will be formulated into one cohesive mission statement. So I wanted to share that with you. In addition to that, we have a number of other areas that we are trying to create some clarity for ourselves. One of those is our core values. And like I said previously, this is something that helps us focus internally, but also externally. And so here is that, the building blocks for our future value statement, that we value sustainability, consistency, that we're people-centric, we're collaborators, innovators, we're transparent, inclusive, and that we are focused on a value of community and team wellness. So that is our values building blocks, we'll call it at this point. And then wanted to share our vision. So I'll share that with you next. So this document is kind of describes our future state and what we think about the future. And so we see a future where we have no deferred maintenance, and we're managing our assets responsibly and efficiently, that we are coordinated in our plan for growth, that our tasks, our day-to-day tasks, we're able to achieve those and complete those at 100%, that we have a robust, sustainable, scalable funding source or set of sources, that we have an interconnected system of parks and natural areas, that they're not on islands, that they're interconnected through a robust trail system, that we are coordinating with other governments and jurisdictions that are our neighbors and outside as well, outside of our area, that we are growing in terms of services and programs, that we are adequately equipped, that we have fair and manageable partnerships. Partnerships are such an important part of our success in Parks and Nature, and that those are ones that are reciprocated and symbiotic in nature. That we have a functional trail system that meets the needs of people who don't want to drive. And that we have, so that's just a real quick overview. This is our vision that will work and iterate and develop into a vision statement for the future. A lot of discussion around our vision within our staff level, but also externally. I know a lot of folks here, all of you, have skin in the game on what this looks like. So we'll be bringing back draft versions of both our mission, vision, core values statements for you to provide feedback on, input, and to poke holes in. We think that those products will be stronger and better with more sets of eyes on them, and that this system also is not the staff system. It's your system. We as staff are the stewards of the system, but really you are the ones that this system belongs to. So that's a quick overview of what we've been working on in terms of our mission, vision, core value statements.
I think it's a good idea, and I'm glad you're doing it. With enough chaos and turnover in the last 4 or 5 years in the whole department, public works and parks, lands, nature, and all of you guys, I think it's a good idea to gel all that stuff back together.
The other bit too that I didn't mention is that this, you know, our PROS plan expires in 2027. And so it's on this 6-year renewal cycle. That PROS plan is really, what's really valuable, that PROS plan, is to have a revised mission, vision, core value statement. That's one that's owned by all of us in the room, staff, and community, and that we start with something more robust, more ambitious, a little audacious, that help launch us into that next phase of work behind our next version of our PROS plan. So yes, seeking your feedback on those as we'll bring those back to you next month. In draft form, in actual statement form, not the building block form. Okay, any thoughts so far on either name or any of the mission, vision, values building blocks?
I like the name.
Nope, great work, Ross.
Hi there. What was that? I'm sorry.
No, I'm with Jim. I think it's appropriate. It's really, really valid. It's a great time to do the relook.
Thank you.
I think the name definitely will be a long-term help to balancing because of all of the regional trails and along the East Fork. As you gain a connectivity there, it ties back to that function. And as was discussed the other day, casually, as the city grows, they take over some of your city community parks, and leaving you with more of the regional stuff, and Parks and Nature holds that in its hands well. It's good.
And then any other, sorry, I have a public comment.
You need me to come up there?
Okay.
So the deferred maintenance, 100% deferred maintenance, I thought that sounds great. Also ambitious. Is there an inventory of deferred maintenance asks, and within what time frame do you aspire to have 100% completion of deferred maintenance?
Yeah. How that's defined can vary. We absolutely need to revise our maintenance management plan document and update that on a regular basis. There are obviously some considerations on what that definition looks like in the future that hinge on funding in large part and capacity. And so those are conversations we yet need to have. But I think it's important for us to kind of set the standard for what we would like to shoot for, what we'd like to aim for. and then figure out how to get there as time goes on.
If I could just jump in and add to Ross's response. We have a list of major maintenance projects that I would call it informal at best. We don't have a real formalized database of major maintenance projects. We've been getting around to our properties individually and developing a list of projects and then prioritizing those projects so the major maintenance category in the capital plan reflects sort of the true need on the ground, but it is not an exhaustive list. It's on one of my priority items to develop is a complete deferred maintenance list. So.
Thanks, David. Okay, the next item I wanted to discuss and present and ask for your honest and open feedback and input and thoughts. And that is the conversation that really is kicking off tonight, right now, about what the future of the park system looks like and how we create a really sustainable system, a sustainable future for our park system. And those of you who have been involved in Parks Advisory Board for years now are aware there have been some challenging times and some exciting advancements and growth and development of our system, and some questions about the future. And so we want to talk about that in a little more depth tonight and solicit your feedback on the PowerPoint deck and any thoughts and anything that may be missing. We'd like you to point those out. This is kind of the early draft of what will become a deck that's reflective of where we want to go and how we might get there. So we wanted to present that to you. I think we've talked a little bit about what the values of parks are, what the values of parks and nature are for the community, for the county. And what our data shows is that it is. Our community really values parks, natural areas, and open space trails. And what we know is that there's going to be a ton of growth in the future. There has been and there will continue to be a ton of growth. But how do we meet the needs now and into the future for the growth of the system, the nature of the system, quality of the system? What we know is that the more green time kids have, the less screen time they have. And if we can get kids and community members out into the parks interacting, that it's a win. So I wanted to just run through this deck with you and ask for your thoughts and feedback on it. Hopefully everybody can see this. So we're calling it our sustainable future conversation. This is, like I said, is really we're at a pivotal point. We've got some key questions to answer about our current status and our future. And really an opportunity for us to ask the question, what kind of a system do we want? What kind of a system do people in Clark County want? And how should the system serve them? And key to that is, how do we get there? What are the funding sources that help us get there and help us meet the need into the future? And so we'll talk a little bit about that as we get into this deck. But wanted to share with you first an overview. This is a map of our system. You can see the green areas are our parks and natural areas. They're spread out throughout the county. The yellowish areas are the city boundaries. And so we also have parks within the city boundaries, not just in the county. The area just north of Vancouver, that you see outlined in black there. Actually, all the black lines on this map are the urban growth boundaries. So those are the areas, the extent to which the cities can grow within the county. The area just north of Vancouver happens to be also roughly the outline of the Greater Clark Park District. So everything north of the city of Vancouver boundary in yellow, but south of that black line, that's generally the Greater Clark Park District. And that's the area where there's a dedicated funding source, a separate jurisdiction, essentially, a metropolitan park district is what it's called, that that essentially we transfer money from that entity over to the county to be utilized exclusively for parks within the Greater Clark Park District. And then all of the parks outside of that area, those are county parks as well. There's not a funding source dedicated to those. It's general fund dollars. So we'll talk a little bit about that. So what you can see by looking at this map is there's a funding source for some of the parks, dedicated source, but not all. And actually a majority by acreage are outside of the Greater Clark Park District. So here's some data from our PROS plan. What we know is that residents visit parks and nature sites frequently. 91% have visited a park within the last month, and fewer than 3% of folks in Clark County have not visited a park in the last year. So the large majority of,
I find that number hard to believe, though, that many people.
Yep, that many.
Could we get that information?
That came from the data collected from during our PROS update.
They didn't extrapolate the sample size. They did a sample size and extrapolated that number.
Mm-hmm. Like any survey tool, right? You make assumptions based upon your respondent numbers, and ours was a pretty robust number of respondents. So residents also strongly value the parks. Not only are they visiting them frequently, 98% think parks and nature in Clark County are important to the quality of life in Clark County. So this is based directly from folks who are using parks. Another thing I wanted to talk about was why we exist from a statute perspective. There's a Washington Administrative Code and the Revised Code of Washington that indicate that jurisdictions need to plan for parks and open space, and it's a requirement. It's a requirement per the comprehensive plan, that is updated, and actually in Clark County is being updated right now. And a component of that comprehensive plan is Parks Recreation Open Space Plan. And so that's the work that essentially defines what our system will look like in the future and how we're maintaining the park system. So these are the requirements, and that these are not just nice to haves. These are actions we need to take. And then, as I mentioned earlier, as we just talked about at the staff level, discussing sort of those core values and understanding what it is we actually do, what it is we're actually trying to work towards, one, ensuring that access is achievable by everyone, that our parks are inviting and accessible to everybody, that our parks exist for sustainable stewardship, that we maintain them sustainably, and that they are going to be here in perpetuity sustainably. We recognize that our parks are vital for economic vitality. You could look at the number of tournaments and the folks that are coming into Clark County from other areas on a regular basis utilizing our parks and open space. They're paddling at Vancouver Lake. They're riding horses from outside the county. They're coming here because of our interesting, compelling park system. Those visitors help vitalize our area and our local businesses. And then health and wellness. You know, the folks, whether they're coming for horseback riding or paddling, or in this picture, you see a couple folks fishing on the river. People are coming to use our parks to get away, to break free of their regular routines, socialize, interact with others. So that's really, so those are the kind of the main components of why we do this work throughout the county system. And, you know, the parks are really heavily used. We saw the number of percentage of folks that are actually utilizing our parks. Well, this is from our PROS plan. This is the growth projections from the state that are actually outdated now. The numbers are higher than this in the current iteration from the state. You can see we are going to see more and more people moving to Clark County. And so there will be more and more demand on our park system. 2035, I believe, is when we're projected to pass Spokane County as the third largest county in the state in terms of population. It'll go Kings, Snohomish, and then Clark. So this is a very desirable area, I think, in parts, the parks that we have and the parks of the future that we will have. So we need to plan for this. And this is the work that we do within the comp plan, within our PROS plan, and the work we do here at PAP. To achieve this is going to require some hard decisions, and it's going to require us to maintain what we have currently, but also to continue to keep pace with this growth. We need to fund and expand our system if we're going to meet the need, and that's in a number of different areas. It's operationally, so our maintenance and operations. It's on the capital. Maintaining our stuff that we have currently, so it's maintenance of our existing infrastructure, but then it's also capital growth that the new parks will require funding as well. So it's kind of in three areas. So we want to talk a little bit more in detail about what our current situation looks like and how we can make assumptions what our future might look like based upon our current situation. So this is the district projections. Within our parks district, red is expenditure, green is revenue. So you can see we have an imbalance moving forward and into the future. We have gaps, especially in these growth years where we see 643,000, actually now higher than that. As I mentioned, these aren't the most recent numbers. So in 2030, we have our largest gaps in funding within the district, within that dedicated area of funding. Now let's go outside the district, and that's the gap that exists outside of the district, sort of that northern part where the bulk of our acreage lies. There is a significant gap in 2030. So in order, as I said, to keep up with the operational needs, the capital maintenance needs, and the capital growth needs, we need to figure out a path forward. And so we're going to talk about three different paths and what this future could look like. Here's a detailed budget picture projection of what it looks like out to 2030.
These numbers also from the latest plan that we got copies of lately.
They may be. They have been presented previously at council, so you may have seen those in the past. I just wanted to throw that out there. So given that deficit, given that gap. This is our fourth quarter report on our parks maintenance staff and how the how their time is spent and where specifically their time is spent. And I put a red box around this pie chart. So you can see we had 3,194 tasks completed that were assigned to different employees. We had 1,451 that are what we call canceled. Essentially, the staff didn't have time to complete those tasks. That amounts to about a third of the tasks within our system are not currently being completed in the existing funding picture. And so this pie chart only gets more challenging as that funding gap grows into the future.
This is operational.
This is our maintenance team. And so we have really good data on what's happening. And Eric's here who oversees one of our teams. So Eric knows this well. He knows that we have a number of tasks that are canceled on a regular basis. Okay, so the three scenarios. what does our picture look like into the future? This is the core of the conversation. And so we're gonna describe three different scenarios, and we'll describe kind of what those scenarios look like and what they could look like into the future. And so the first that we'll go over is called decline, the decline scenario, the sustain scenario, and the fulfill scenario. So in a scenario of decline, you saw those gaps that we showed you just a minute ago. The decline scenario would essentially be taking no action, no additional funding sources. We maintain with the funding sources we have. What this would mean is a number of parks needing to be closed because we wouldn't have the staff capacity to maintain those. It would mean a closure of amenities within the parks. It would mean a decline in the level of service, as I described. Those canceled tasks would mean more of those canceled tasks. We would almost need to end new park acquisition and development for future growth because there wouldn't be funding to do the future development. We would likely encounter safety issues and liability issues throughout the system if we stayed in this current state that we're at. So this is really the status quo state. If you took the funding levels we have now and extrapolated those into the future, those gaps would be present that I showed you on those charts and on those tables. In the second scenario, we're calling it sustain. In this scenario, essentially we would close those gaps. We would go back to this. The dollars in red, we would find those dollars to fill the gaps and essentially make up for our deficiencies in funding, current funding. So this would only fill the gap, wouldn't allow us to meaningfully meet the expansion needs as the population grows. We would continue to invest in new parks at our current level. We would need to balance preventative maintenance to the current need at that time. It doesn't increase the quality of service. So that number of tasks canceled, we would probably be able to sustain that. Doesn't improve, as I said, the quality of the system overall. It would keep parks open. We would keep our current parks open, and we would keep the amenities open if we were able to close those gaps. So that scenario is what we call the sustained scenario. So the system as you see it. In the next scenario, what we're calling the fulfill scenario. So this would be finding funding sources to maintain a level consistent with peers. So we're essentially keeping up with growth, keeping up with that pace of growth, meeting that need. Preventative maintenance to scale with the growing system so as the system grows, that list of tasks canceled goes down. We're able to close that gap in deferred maintenance. We're able to reinvest in significant regional parks and essentially meet that need that we see in the growth projections, that the parks that are needed in the future that don't exist currently, we're able to build those, develop those, and maintain those. So those are our three scenarios, the fulfill, sustain, and decline scenarios. So I wanted to talk next about really present this broad, big list of potential funding sources. How do we either close the gap, which is the sustain scenario, or how do we reach that fulfill gap? That future state where we're meeting the needs of the growth as the system changes due to increased population in the county. So I'm going to go through a quick list here. This is not in any order. This is really literally just putting a menu on the wall for you. So impact fees, changing the methodology or looking at the rate of the impact fees, the Greater Clark Park District that exists now, increasing the rate taxpayers pay in that district. Changing the boundary of that taxing district could be a solution. Within that district, utilizing the 1% increase that's allowed by state statute each year, plus banked capacity. In past years, when we haven't taken that, we can add to that 1%.
So they didn't take it this year.
They didn't take it this year. Yeah.
I don't think they've taken it. When was the last time they took it?
A couple years ago. Yeah. But that,
so that's banked then, so they can take 3%, let's say, next time or that way.
Can only do it 1 year back, and the rate actually goes down because the assessed value of the property increases, which causes the rate to go down to collect that same amount of tax. There could be a new countywide parks levy.
Is that what's meant by banked capacity?
Correct.
Catching up with an untaken one the previous, but only one previous year.
Correct. Yep. And I think it's approximately about 80% of that 1% that you can collect in banked. It's not exact, but it's around there. So I mentioned the countywide levy. Levies are potential valuable tools to look at. Adding a new Metro Park District similar to the Greater Clark Park District in addition to the Greater Clark Park District. And then the idea of a completely new MPD, that there could be a countywide one, countywide MPD, instead of just adding a second one. Increasing REIT, which is real estate excise tax that's paid on the transfer or sale or purchase of a property. REIT dollars are really valuable to our system and allow us to invest in future parks. Conservation Futures rate update. So Conservation Futures are what our legacy lands program utilizes to acquire new properties. And many of those properties are utilized by parks to build trails and support facilities. And some of those are, Janice, I know you utilize some of those properties, those legacy lands. That's funded by the Conservation Futures Tax, CFT. And then here, the next list is just throw some various taxes that other jurisdictions in the state have utilized for various purposes. But there are a number of mechanisms to pull from. Some of these mechanisms are small contributors. Some are larger contributors. So as we think about the funding need as a bucket we need to fill, you need probably some large rocks in that bucket to fill it. You need some medium-sized rocks in that bucket to fill it, and you need the small as well to fully fill that bucket. So this is just a list of other taxes and tools that are revenue sources for governments to fund things like parks and other needs. The lower portion of it is tax increment financing tools that are utilized. A local improvement district, for example, where only the increment is collected. And the urban renewal concept, which is also incremental.
Where would parking fees and admissions come in?
So those are certainly, and we should add those to this list. Absolutely, should look at any and all potential options. This is by no means an exhaustive list, but I think Teresa, you brought up that's a valuable one to look at.
Presented that.
Yeah.
That's not the same as an admissions tax.
Correct.
Something else.
Correct. Yep. And then sort of overarching all of these scenarios, I think there are some really clear strategic actions that need to happen throughout our system. Regardless of the scenario we select, these actions are actions that we as staff need to follow up on and ensure happen. Number one is rebalancing of our parks and nature portfolio. As the cities continue to grow into the urban growth areas, the cities tend to need parks for their own city system. And so one of the things that happens over time is the cities acquire those parks from counties. And so there's this natural sort of rebalancing that happens as cities expand. And so we need to plan for and get ahead of those upcoming changes as the cities expand their boundaries through annexation over time. The second bullet down is revitalizing our regionally significant parks. So we have these amazing regionally significant parks that are packed with people. Think Louisville, think Vancouver Lake, think Lacamas Lake Regional, think Frenchman's Bar. Those are just a few. Really significantly regional parks. And thinking about them differently, operationalizing our existing assets within those parks and creating some really, truly synergistic partnerships, some really beneficial partnerships that bring those parks to life in a different way than we have done.
What do you mean by operationalizing an existing asset?
Yeah.
And that's a great word, but what does it mean?
Question. It could mean very different things in different parks. So let me give you an example. At Vancouver Lake and other sites, in the past, we've had lifeguards. That changes. Having lifeguards at a site potentially changes how many and who comes to visit that site. So we have this amazing asset, this lake or river or whatever it may be. By changing how we operate it, brings life into that space in a different way than it had previously. So that's just one example, but I could think of, we could think of a number, boat rentals and,
I just did. I'm trying to make my way through the 25 cent word.
It's a very ambiguous statement in that bullet, very broad. And then the next bullet down is to plan in concert with the cities around us, to work cooperatively with our cities to ensure that the system, the robust system, and as it changes over time, that the system, and when I say it in this bullet, meaning the system of city parks and the system of county parks work in concert, and we plan and coordinate appropriately. And then the last bullet, focus on the future state. And this is in meeting growth in the future, knowing that we see this pretty significant sizable increase in population within the county. This is really a mindset in how we approach, how we manage parks, how we develop parks, how we steward parks, that we're focused on the future and not focused on kind of how we did things in the past. We graduate our thinking. So that is a quick overview of a very rough PowerPoint that I wanted to share with everyone and solicit your feedback, input, questions, and thoughts. This is a work in progress, and you're key in helping to refine it.
So we have presented a few things to the council about it, and really we haven't got anywhere at all with that. So. What's the plan to get us all on the same page, kind of a thing? And if you don't want to, under any circumstances, change how we tax or how we, get money, then how where do we go?
That's a fantastic question, Teresa. And I don't, I am not in a position to answer that question. My job is really to present the current state and the future demands and potential options to meet the future needs. That's really where my role begins and ends.
Maybe give them more options, not piecemeal, but a plan. Maybe they would pick.
So I think, And I think so. If and when this in its final state, in this rough state that you just saw, I think that the question that I think we as a community need to discuss is what are the next steps, and if these three scenarios are in front of us, what steps do we need to take now to get there? And I think so. One of the recommendations would likely be something like. Staff recommending a sustainable futures funding task force that can look at these various funding options and vet which are realistic, which are not, which help us get there, and which potentially hinder us as a county. And to have a really deep analysis of those different options and present a set of recommendations back to council in the future. So that would be one of the one of the recommendations I see us making.
Are you going to take
Brandon out of?
Oops. No, go ahead.
Go ahead. Good.
That's a fantastic presentation. Lots of great information. And there's probably no easy answer to the funding's question. It's probably the hardest part of it. Within the circles that I operate, I probably anticipate how some of those funding options might be reacted to. I think the levy would probably be received the best. And I'm talking about groups who are in construction and who are advocating for affordable housing. They feel like some of these impact fees hit them the hardest. And so that contributes to affordable housing issues. And levies are spread more diversely across a wider population base. So these groups will either probably at least be neutral and maybe support as opposed to oppose a levy. So of that list, the levy, in my opinion, would be option one.
I think I just, kind of Brandon, the absolutely agree that this big list is folks, certain folks in our community will find things on that list that work in opposition and hinder their progress. And so I think one of the main benefits and purpose of a funding task team, a sustainable funding task team, is to vet those and sort out where alterations can be made, where exceptions can be made. So, for example, you mentioned affordable housing, where waivers are appropriate for certain taxes or levies, where they're not appropriate, and provide those recommendations through that task team. Yeah, great points.
You're developing this presentation. Do you have some idea when you're going to take it to council?
So
what's your time to do this a little bit?
Yeah, that's a great question. At this point, we don't. Okay. We don't have a firm date. We are aiming for, we can, Q1 would be ideal. So late March, maybe it rolls into early February. Early April. So that's where we're at right now. That's as far as we've got in terms of a date. I don't have any.
We have I don't know that anybody's made a presentation like this to the council in recent history. And I think it would be beneficial. Jen? Hello?
Oh, hi, everyone. I'm Jenny Coker. I'm the new Deputy Public Works Director. And so Ross and I have been strategizing about conveying this message to the new council and just gathering their priorities for the community as well. We have a work session scheduled for Public Works, and specifically we are going to flag policies for the new Parks and Nature. And from there, use that as a springboard to meet with them individually before bringing this to the council, because it's a lot of information. It's complicated. It has a big history, and it's a lot to wrap your mind around. But I just love the energy and the vision of where this is going. And so I think if we start from that and gather the priorities of the community, we can start marching through this. So it's just the new council is getting up to speed with so many different things, but we are scheduled to meet with them January 22nd to present overall public works, and we'll use that as the initial conversation to move this forward.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for beautiful. Here's the advantage we have in Fuller County. I don't say the Pacific Northwest by extension. People come here for a reason. And they come for, and their reason is state relations. open spaces. That's why people come to my second question. Open spaces, what do they have? Your data stated clearly, I think, 91% of the people who are here to work, it's people that are looking for. So that gives them an advantage when it comes to all of those. So what I would like to know statistically, which will serve to give knowledge and information to council and give the political government, what the public think about it. Because if we have that data, which you were saying 80%, 90%, what are they willing to do to contribute for us to sustain and progress, and they have that data, then they have political government. And they're going to support us in many things. Additionally, anything we put up there in the left, or whatever, the public is willing to contribute. So I'd like to know what the public thinks. I think I know what they think, and I'd like data to support them. And just to make it easier, I'll say let's do something like this. I'll pick two communities. I don't know what district they belong. I'll pick Richfield. I don't know what district that is. And I'll pick Cameron's physical learning. Because we have a lot of people come from those communities. But they think they begin from those areas and from those spaces. And that information can inform us what we. That's my approach. And that's, I mean, based upon what you presented, that's what I'll begin.
Thank you, Paulo. Yeah, that if I'll just kind of give my experience in working in different money measures and conversations about funding, I think you're absolutely correct. The council needs to know where the community stands and what they would support, what they wouldn't support. And so that an important, an absolutely vital step.
Political company.
Yeah. And just knowing what the appetite is, right? And so typically when you see that, it's in the form of market research. So let's assume there's some task team, some sustainable funding task team that's set up. That task team potentially could recommend something like the market research you're suggesting. That takes the form of statistically valid surveys. So it's the text message you get on your phone or the phone calls you get on your phone. It's the focus groups that you see formed, group around this size, sits down for an hour and a half, and asks questions about level of support, funding, and for what assets and infrastructure they might support. That all gets bundled into a report, market research report, that comes back to policymakers and decision makers, and that informs, as you're suggesting, informs their decisions and gives them the.
You mentioned something else that in that plan, you saw it's to fragment cities. And so, what I would like to ask those cities, I think I know the answer at least one of the cities. What surveys do they do to know what their community is willing to pay? So, they have a metric there, they have a system. So, we can go there. For interest that we're asking, because we're working, that can help us do those things. And we take that model, at least for that community, and go to council with it. If they see that, that's a beginning that we can take that some other way. So there are very different models here that wouldn't cost us a lot of money and partner up with other teams. So,
just random, but. Our PIF districts are for new parks funding.
So the yes, impact fees collected at the time the development permits are pulled. Typically, yeah. And there are variations of that. Those funds are dedicated exclusively for expansion of the system.
Right.
Cannot be spent for maintenance and operations.
And I think it's, and I haven't seen balances on those recently, but there's not a whole lot of money left in, I don't think. And good grief, could eat up whatever's left. And is there some way to, you've got that expansion that's going into the urban growth boundary. I mean, most of it, a lot of it's going north. Is there some way to capture some funds there for new parts anyway?
So yeah, that is a mechanism that's utilized. So the impact fee district boundary should match the urban growth boundary, right? So that's one thing to consider and look at to ensure, to your point, Jim, to capture that the money that's intended for new development to offset their impact in the park system. The other is the question with impact fees is the rate. What's the rate that's being paid? That varies, and that's set county by county, city by city. But it has to be justifiable based upon your level of service. So, and I don't believe our rate has been touched in quite a while.
Is there a way to modify that rule so that it's used to provide for the increased maintenance that a park needs because of the new subdivision surrounding it?
There is not. It's defined in state statute, and it's exclusive to the capital costs, the construction, and the planning and construction of those new park assets.
Just okay. So the classic example, of course, is how the people in the million-dollar-plus mansions that used to be a stable by Whipple Creek, they come and use that much more now than they did when they didn't live there. And the paths are getting wider and muddier. And it's not all them, but, you know, it's increased use. So, yeah, couldn't there be increased parking lot development or trail maintenance? That's not...
Not covered. First state statute.
That's
not
a good thing.
So you pay, a developer will pay impact fees for a variety of reasons. There's a school impact fee, there's a water road impact fee. So all this infrastructure that needs to be built as a result of that new development coming in. So let's use water as an example. The impact fee will pay for the pipes to be installed in the ground and led to that new development and the sewer line. Those residents or that business then pays on a monthly basis, pays for water, pays for sewer. So there's money coming in to maintain the system and to pay for the actual water, right? With parks infrastructure, that's not the case. You don't pay monthly for parks. At least that model hasn't been utilized very frequently.
I was going to say, if you had a user fee, that would pay mostly.
I just want to second some of the comments related to an impact fee. I think it's definitely a policy that penalizes those who move here rather than those who are already here. And anybody can be a park user, including those who move here and already live here. But I guess I'd be curious about which ones of the options in terms of revenue would require a vote for the people. And would that include some of the boundary changes, levy lifts, and all these other things, just so we can see?
Yeah, you bet.
Kind of,
I'll go through
the strategy of both solving long term versus short term. Obviously, we can go to the council, get more money from the general fund, and would that solve some of our more long term issues? I would imagine the more long term issues would need to be solved using some either A, restructuring of boundaries, or B, some alternative revenue sources. But I guess I had a follow-up question, too, in regards to our current level of coordination with city governments. Because I've heard that some of the issues that Vancouver has had with expanding into their urban growth area is the amount of infrastructure costs that they would need to pay for to make sure that their roads are up to speed, their XYZs are up to speed, and then put a ton of money into Fisher's Landing in East Vancouver in recent years in comparison to, say, downtown to get that part of town more up to speed with city codes. So I'd be curious to see, how can we ease the handoff? Not to say that parks are the number one thing driving their acquisitions, but if we can make it easier for cities like Vancouver to have our codes similar to their codes, at least in the urban growth area. So when they do come, it's not, these roads aren't up to our standards that we have as a city, either of those parks. So that's going to slow our own acquisitions down, because ideally we'd love to have Vancouver take over.
That's a significant factor for cities, absolutely. Are the maintenance costs or capital maintenance costs in addition to the operating maintenance costs. What do they need to replace and fix that are big ticket items? And so, yeah, coordination on that front absolutely is what I meant. Part of what I meant is in that bullet. Ensuring that the county's plan to transition meshes with the city's plan to transition. And so, yeah, that's a big part of the work. In terms of the specific measures and which requires a vote, which does not, some of these mechanisms can be implemented by council vote. Some of them require voter approval. Some of them require not just a simple majority, but a 60% threshold. So I'll just walk through really quickly. The impact fees and the methodology update, those are council actions that require engagement in community conversations. GCPD lid lift, that requires a vote. That any kind of a levy, that's the MPD levy, requires a simple majority, so 50, just over 50%. Any of the GCPD actions require a simple majority. A new countywide levy is a 50% threshold. A new MPD is also 50%. Increase in REIT, the real estate excise tax, that's a council action. That's a rate question, not an implementation of a new tax. It's just essentially updating that real estate excise tax. Same with conservation futures tax. The mechanism is already in existence in the county. Not every county utilizes CFT, conservation futures, but it can be a significant funder of parks, future parks.
I missed how the REIT gets increased.
Yeah, that's a rate question. So it's already in existence, and so council would need to have a discussion, and council could take action
back to the council
as to what that rate is.
And that's a lot of that is O&M money, right?
So yeah, so REIT can be utilized for major maintenance. And David Stipe, our expert on this topic, is on the line. If I misspeak, please chime in. REITs can be, there's certain restrictions. REIT can be utilized. It has to be a project within your capital plan. That capital plan has to have a site plan developed, and the actions have to be utilized for that community, the community desired outcome, the site plan. And so did I capture that correctly, David?
In general terms, if it's being used for new property development, yes. But it's limited at this point at like three. I think our limitation is $3.5 million average over a 6-year period, which is almost entirely dedicated to major maintenance of existing park assets.
Thank you, David. The taxes you see listed here, the taxes that you see are some of them are already in existence. So we have a lodging tax in the county. It's a question of what the rate is, and council could make that determination. But oftentimes, if you see a tax increase that's already in existence, oftentimes councils want the voters to have a say in that. So you'll see it on a ballot as an advisory vote or a recommendation vote. And so that's the taxes you see listed there. There are some other taxes that are utilized within the state that I didn't list, but these are some that have been used, as you're well aware. Gas tax, every time you fill up, you're paying a percentage to the state, and so on and so forth. Some areas utilize gas tax for a specific purpose and dedicate, they could say, 0.01% added to the current rate, and we're going to dedicate that 0.01% to parks, for example. And then the increment finance tools, so a LID, a local improvement district, is a vote of the people. And I believe that one's 60%. I don't recall off the top of my head. Essentially what it is a taxing district that's created for the benefit of that district. So you might imagine a new neighborhood that's developed, and there's no park in the neighborhood. That neighborhood could vote and determine that they want to create this taxing district that funds the creation of a new park or some new infrastructure. And that local improvement district would be the only ones paying for that new improvement. So that's an example of a local improvement district. And then urban renewal districts are also utilized in this fashion, and they're increment tools. So as the tax rate, as the assessed value goes up over the years, incrementally increases, that only that increment is taxed, and it goes into a fund, and that increment, only the increment, can be utilized for improvements in that area and renewing that area. It could be streets, it could be sidewalks, it could be parks. And so that's the tool that you see utilized in areas that really need to be reinvigorated, specifically called urban renewal. Yeah.
Do you have a relationship in Bellingham, Bellendon, and Montreal?
I know Bellingham well. I went to college there at Western. So, yeah.
Because when I look at Bellingham, I see a city that perhaps is experiencing or experiencing their growth just, and they are growing in their parks and everything. So my question today is, how are they doing it? Because we can learn from others as well.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious. I go to Bellingham all the time because I'm very curious. So,
that's a great question. I don't know off the top of my head, but that's certainly research we need to do.
Because their parks, I looked at it. Their parks, I mean, they're like seven, I think, for the county park, they're like seven dams, like, and their city, just, you know, Bellingham, they're like 12 dams. And they're very active because of their population. And they have more complex than ours. They're like 5.1% of their population is Asian. They have to cater to that. I mean, it's very complex, but that's why, how are they doing?
Well, they're utilizing the tools here that we just talked about. Not all of them, probably. And the other tool that is not on the list is a bond, parks bond. And we, you know, bonds can be utilized exclusively for capital purposes only. So it does that. A bond idea wouldn't answer the operational question, which is why we didn't put on the list. But that certainly could be added and something that a sustainable funding task force could dive into.
One of the things I think we need to recognize is we have users at some of our parks that come from the far reaches of the Portland metro area. And they come up here because of our rivers, because they're a different experience than Willamette, et cetera. And they come up here to ride their horses. Now, I ride my horses at two places in Oregon. A lot of Oregon people come up to the Whipple Creek and Battleground Lake, and they pay a use fee at Battleground Lake. It's a $30 a year thing or $10 a day. The refuge, I'm the one that issues 97% of the annual passes for that refuge as a volunteer. And they come primarily, the annual passes come from as far south as Salem and Medford, believe it or not, and Olympia and Bellingham. Why they would want to have an annual pass here, I have no idea. But they do, and it's basically, that's $15 a year. The point being, our parks might not draw like our big rivers and our refuge, but we're still drawing from elsewhere. So to capture their use fees, you ought to consider use fees. People are used to it. You whip out your $30 a year permit for Oregon, you whip out your 30-day-a-year permit for Washington, you pull out your, in my case, your senior pass at the refuge, but it's a use fee. that you pay once and or annually and
we had a plan. We had a committee that of the board that had made a plan up for the use fees and also for rental fees for like, you know, in the key. And so that was put on hold. Yeah. So
the refuge has a $3 a day and I cannot pay today. They offer clemency if someone just doesn't have the money. It's all use fees. We should too.
I believe Teresa just mentioned that there was a committee that worked on that. Jim worked on it. Rocky actually presented the fee adjustment to council, I believe, in March of last year, April of last year. I can't remember the exact month. And at that point, they directed staff to come back and bring a complete funding package, not just the single sort of park use fee strategy. And so that's what Rocky was working on in the latter half of his tenure, latter part of his tenure. And then Ross is picking that mantle up. But it is something that is part of the sort of revenue package. I believe there were some things that Rocky had proposed in that staff report that were probably a little bit more ambitious than council was interested in pursuing, like parking at 17 different properties as opposed to the 3 that we currently charge parking at. So those maybe a little bit ambitious. So, but it is something that we need to consider as part of the package, because it is a pay to play strategy, and pay to play can be acceptable to a certain set of users.
One question that came up at that was a previous member of the board was concerned about diversity or people that could not afford to pay parking fee or thing. And then he said, well, there could be, you know, I could give a free parking thing to veterans. We give, there's all kinds of ways that we can address that. That's not, should be a difference.
Yeah, and that's how the refuge does it. Plus they check the box, I cannot pay today. It's okay. You know, so many other people pay extra, more than makes up. And that's a buy the car thing. The $3 is by the car, which is essentially 4 people in theory.
Yeah, I think so this presentation, as it evolves and changes, we'll have the same conversation in February as well. I want to bring this back as it's more refined in the future. This presentation, even in its final state, is not fully baked, meaning there's a whole bunch of work that needs to happen. Right, this some depth of conversation. We talk specifically about each potential funding source and the impacts, implications, and benefits of each one, and have a full vetting of that. And the market research, as Paulo brought up, ensuring that we understand what folks will support and what they won't, and then some set of recommendations going to council on how we might proceed.
And remembering that the youth have opinions too, and they're out there using them.
As a member of all, I'll tell you one thing. If you want to get parents to pay for something, get the youth side of it.
Thank you all.
You get your work cut out for you.
Yeah.
That's ambitious to put all stuff together.
Good.
But you need to do it.
Good.
It needs to be done. Yes, we're back. Back to unfinished business, which being the bylaws.
So bylaws. So we, at the last meeting, we discussed adjusting the bylaws, or we did adjust the bylaws to ensure that we had wording such that we were staggering terms, the ability to stagger terms, so we don't have a whole bunch of people term out at the same time. and it was adopted. And then there was some further conversation around the frequency of meetings and or the flexibility of the date of the meeting. And so what we would propose is that the current wording is such that we have one meeting per quarter.
Which the lawyers put in, apparently.
Correct. So that is the minimum number of meetings that we shall have. What we would recommend is some additional wording be added to that to provide for meetings at your discretion as needed or as desired by this board. And so that's our recommendation.
I submitted via email to Jim, you, and Amy, and didn't think to print it out for myself, a proposed modification. So you could choose to look at that. That should take care of that issue, just to at least give us a place to start. But I don't have it on me, and I don't do Gmail on my phone.
So we would just look to you all for how we might proceed. You would like us to bring back at the next meeting a proposal for how we might address that. I think it would look something like the current wording plus ensuring that you have the ability to set meeting dates as frequently as you want.
I made a motion. You could do it today if you wanted to get this over with. Amy just has to look up on the email.
Not doing that right now.
Can't do it.
No.
Okay.
So if the wording might one of you propose some wording?
I did.
What was the wording?
I don't have it on me.
All right, well.
I forgot to print it. I was too busy printing my interview notes. I sent it to Jim since he's the chair. I'm
trying to find it here.
He apparently does do email on his phone.
That's very close. I think special meetings may be held as often as it seems necessary. All meeting dates and that's what it is.
We don't have to.
That's what it is.
Do it next.
So your motion, okay. The regular public PMD meeting is held monthly. Dates to be determined by the advisory board members, set dependent on county staff availability and to avoid conflicts for the other county meetings. Special meetings may be held as often as the board deems necessary.
That's how it's written now.
That's how it's written now?
That's I put in everything the lawyers crammed in there because they added it to what we had. I just changed it back to monthly, leaving off a day of the week so that allowed us flexibility. Because quarterly won't get it. I don't think I included the quarterly as a minimum.
No, you said it was held monthly and you changed it to monthly. But,
yeah,
you know, quarterly is, I don't mind quarterly. I mean, it's just fine.
Okay. We'll never get anything done quarterly.
No, we aren't going to do it. We aren't going to do meetings quarterly. We're going to do it monthly.
Yeah.
Which, I mean.
But the way the lawyers put it in didn't allow us that option. It said quarterly, not at a minimum, just flat quarterly. They were in a hurry and didn't pay attention.
Is that no quarterly? But meeting dates can be dependent upon county. Okay, special meetings may be held as often as the board deems necessary.
It all works, yeah. And I understand the quarterly. The quarterly is that's the minimum requirement, or that's the requirement. If we plan to have a monthly meeting, then it's just, and is there any reason we wouldn't have a monthly meeting? Because we can cancel meetings.
Yeah.
Because of snow or for whatever reason. So why wouldn't you just say held monthly, just make it monthly instead of quarterly? Because we're going to have monthly meetings, right?
Well, we have our current meetings are quarterly, according to the bylaws.
Our current meetings are held monthly. It was written, this is a proposed change to write it quarterly. If we don't like this, though, we can take it back.
Yeah, it's always been monthly. And then
Then
they changed it to quarterly. So I say put it back to monthly because that's what it's been.
Okay.
And then if something happens, so we've had meetings canceled for ice storms or for whatever reason, that works. You just give notice, right? We do. Or we could propose to put it back to how it was the second Tuesday of the month, or we could just leave it as...
No, we wanted flexibility to wiggle it around. And the lawyers, I think, tried to respond to that, but then they got stuck on the monthly, missing that we meant that only as a... Excuse me, they got stuck on the quarterly. I think they missed our intent, since probably no one was standing over their shoulder.
So this paragraph does not indicate any day of the week. Just right, so right. Why don't we just leave it vague, say... It's going to be monthly and leave it the vague day of the week.
Does it, in its current iteration, does that allow for you to meet monthly and still adjust as needed?
Yes, it would be held monthly on dates determined by the board, and the meeting dates shall be set dependent upon county staff. So if we wanted to change the date for whatever reason, sounds like you can, and special meetings can be held. We could have an additional meeting. It'll all be posted for the public. They know that we're having a meeting. That gives us the most flexibility. And I think it should say monthly, since I can't see any reason why we wouldn't have a monthly. As Janice says, we won't get anything done if we don't have a monthly.
You like to?
I move that we change the words quarterly to monthly and leave it everything else as is.
I second that.
Okay.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Done?
Done. You're still, yeah.
Yeah, in reference to the motion, I don't want to pass the motion. I want to open it up for more discussion.
Okay.
Because I want to go back and look at the original. I was trying to get in there a little bit word-wise, but I wanted to listen to what you all had to say. The intent of moving it in the first place was because we wanted the option of days of the week.
Correct.
And so with the current wording, I don't think we really get after the problem. We don't really answer the question.
Yeah, the current wording, well, first, you're 100% correct. This whole came about because you're talking about the day of the week, not monthly or quarterly. That got all messed up. So put it back to monthly. That fixes that problem. But your point is, did we address the issue that we want to have flexibility of the day of the week? I think it's pretty vague here.
Yeah, I think we addressed it. It used to say on Tuesdays.
It doesn't say Tuesdays. It just says dates to be determined. Okay, we determine the dates.
Change the
date. As long as we put them up. And does it make a difference what day of the week it is, as long as we post it, how many days ahead of time we have to post it for the public? Unless we feel that we always want to have it on the same, I want to have it on the same day. My schedule gets crazy. We don't want to have it a different day every month. No. So for the public to think, what are they trying to do? You know, would be the perception of trying to have a secret meeting, I think, or something. So we wouldn't want to do that. We I think we all agree we want it monthly. We want to have a certain day of the week. Do we need to have that day of the week in here? That's the question. No. What do you think, Don?
I think having a day of the week in there is really important. That alleviates any kind of mishaps or miscommunication across the board. Everybody's got a lot on their plate, and the worst scenario is that we don't post it in time and we don't properly inform the public. Now heads are going to roll. By keeping some consistency, I get it. Some people can't always make it, and that's unfortunate. As part of the onboarding process or interview process, it's got to be stated. This is the days of the week that they meet. Keep it consistent. Take as much variability as you can out of it, so less chances for something to mess up. That's just my two cents, and that's what I wanted to discuss.
I see your point that from the public's point of view, if they always know that the meeting is on the second Tuesday of the month, they have in mind that they could participate if they chose. But if we change it the next month and they don't check, and they don't pay attention, then they've missed their opportunity. So I think that would give a perception to the public that we're kind of scooting around the date, and that's not possible.
You are exactly right. I don't disagree
with all of that, but the public isn't normally reading the bylaws to figure it out. They're just going to the announcements.
And that's the point. So if their point is they're just going to the announcements, they think that it's the second Tuesday of every month.
Which arguably it would be forever, unless we had a staff conflict or something like that. But to put it in the bylaws cements it such that to change it, arguably you're not in obedience to your bylaws if you try to change the day without going back and changing your bylaws, which gets old after a while.
Changing the bylaws. So technically, let's say we go second Tuesday of the month, and it goes on, and then all of a sudden we say, well, we want to change it to Wednesday. Just for whatever reason, we say we want to change it to Wednesday. We have to change the bylaws to say Wednesday then.
Correct. And at the last Parks Advisory Board meeting, a motion was presented and proposal was voted on to create the wording we have now. Doesn't mean you can't change it again, but that was discussed. And so the product you're seeing before you is the product of that vote from the last meeting.
Except the quarterly part that we didn't
say. Except the quarterly part. Yeah.
Okay. That's easy. We can just change monthly.
It was just an oversight on the part of the legal team.
I don't mind quarterly, actually, because it still gives you flexibility. That means whatever you want.
Yeah.
But again, I think it's okay. I agree. They don't read the bylaws. My experience working with the public is that they don't read anything, to be honest. You know, they really are not. They want it to be simple. And so making it something the same every month. And you can even say at a meeting, like, okay, I can say right now, but next meeting is going to be a special meeting and we're going to have it on a different date. And we can present that. And they say, I don't know. I see both sides. I think we should change it to monthly. And I'm okay putting the date in there. I'm okay. My concern is that the public will feel like, and they don't read the bylaws, but if we change the date, I think we should need to stick to a date, to a day.
I don't think anybody's saying we should move the date. Just my motion was basically the same as yours. Put the word monthly in instead of quarterly. Leave all that other wording in there to avoid conflicts with other county meetings, blah, blah. That was the only change I made in my online motion to Jim and Ross.
But Don's point is that it should say a day.
Yeah, and I understand.
But your point is that you don't care, but you would like to keep it quarterly.
Quarterly doesn't bother me as long as you get the language.
It's confusing. That means every meeting that isn't on the quarter or quarterly is a special meeting. The public will be like, well, what do I have to do, wait 3 months, not realizing that we're really doing it monthly? We need to be straightforward and transparent. Mm-hmm. We're doing it monthly for those few people that might read the bylaws.
Okay.
My opinion is, go around the office, it should be monthly. And now after listening to Don and thinking about people's perception, it should go ahead and say the day. It's not dumb, I think.
I agree. That's what I was. That's my whole point.
So, all right. Should we table this till next month?
Okay. I make a motion. I'll amend the motion, saying that we should table it till next month.
We're tabling it.
Again, Don.
I guess then I make it's a motion, but two parts. One is we suspend the motion made earlier to change the wording. And the second part is we suspend the conversation until next month.
Well, someone has to second that.
I'll second it. But we're going to suspend the discussion of this till next month. That's what you want to do?
Everybody come back with the written corrections or amendments to it.
Okay. Is all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Aye. Aye.
Suspension of the discussion until next month's meeting.
Yes. Will be held on the second Tuesday of the month.
We're staying with that.
Good call.
Just the discussion's pausing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Not the meeting.
This way we'll give everybody an opportunity to bring their wording that they had emailed.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
No more unfinished business.
Next is officer election.
Okay, we're going to do an election.
Can we nominate people?
Yes.
I nominate Jim DeBrick to be president of, or the chairman of the advisory board.
I second that.
What's blinking? I don't know if that means that he's thinking. Or...
He's thinking.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay.
Aye.
He's
okay.
Not. Okay.
Okay.
I nominate Janice to be the vice chairman. See, I'm quickly passing.
I'm going to nominate you.
I know. I've done it just the last year, so 2 years I think I've done it. Someone else can.
I would accept that nomination. Aye. I don't know how this works, but.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
What they have to do is, if Jim's not here, then you run the meeting. That's all you got to do. Yeah.
Yes.
I only had to do it like twice.
So. And what else? We have a secretary. You can be the secretary.
I'll be the secretary. Okay. Unless, Don, you want to be the secretary? Oh, he's not even. He's not even.
No.
There he is.
No. Yeah. I know. My apologies.
Secretary of Duties.
Yeah. I'm not interested. I am not interested in an executive position.
Okay.
So, okay.
All in favor?
All in favor, aye. Yeah.
Aye.
Okay. Relatively.
You're okay with that, Jim, right? Okay.
We're done.
Okay.
Got
anybody wants to talk about anything else?
Anybody else got anything? Roundtable to chat?
No, I just wanted to say that I hadn't talked to everybody that I had been to Hawkinson and was very impressed with the park. I had not been out there before and was, just thought it was fantastic. I'm going to go again, bring my bike so I can really explore it better because it's a big park.
Yep.
And I went up to Moult Falls and saw the bridge, which is lovely. Did a nice job with the restoration of that bridge. And I was confused because the parking area, I thought they were going to move that. They have a little parking area that's by the falls, which is very congested and it's crazy, just like it always is.
Yeah.
And force people to go to the big parking lot. But I didn't see any changes to the parking signs or anything. So I don't know if that is still the plan for that park, to move to encourage that to be an ADA type parking area, because it's very small. Have you been out to Moulton Falls yet? So... as you come down the road, the first parking lot you come to, if you don't know, and I talked to a couple of people they said, well, how do you get to the falls? And is this the only parking lot? Because they don't know. They don't know. That parking lot is very small, and people park this way, and they park this way, and they leave, their tails are sticking out in the road. They don't realize there's a nice big parking lot if you just go a little bit farther, because there's no signage for it. And so I thought, like, tell people that the main parking lot is ahead. And they were talking about making that maybe the ADA parking lot. Although it's not good for ADA either. It's not, because to get to the other area,
so
you could go on that road. So I don't know what that.
I think signage is an issue there.
Can I jump in? It is in the capital plan to do some additional improvements to the what is currently called the overflow parking lot, which is the big parking lot up in the woods. And it's going to require planning and permitting. There is a signage plan that we worked on with the transportation section during the partially implemented during the construction, the renovation of the bridge, but it did not include signage that directs people to the upper parking lot. That doesn't mean that we can't do some sort of interim improvements to the signage to make people aware that there is that upper parking lot, like a park sign or something like that.
When they enter the parking lot and it's full, there'd be a sign saying additional parking or something.
Yeah,
there was supposed there is a sign that was proposed by transportation that didn't get implemented. There was some additional signage that was proposed by the transportation section that didn't get implemented last year because of budget reasons. We should revisit that sort of signage proposal to make those improvements that we feel would be beneficial, especially when it starts to get busy at the park before recreation season really gets underway in earnest. It's just we put a sort of hold on any work being done in general fund properties because of that. Those signs get those, they have to get paid for through the general fund if they're in the regional parks. And so we're having to make tough choices when it comes to prioritizing what to do and where to do it.
Okay. Good answer. I understand.
Good answer, but it's an issue.
People
are crossing that road and then kind of like a little curve almost. And you can just,
it sounds like it might be good to have a discussion about the future of the system and how to fund these capital.
I know. I want to sign.
It's like, how do you pay for this?
What a novel idea, Ross.
Yeah.
It is another example of how important signage is.
Signage is
important. And signage is tough. Too many words, they won't read it. Too little, they don't read it. Not in their direct point of view, they don't read it.
Well, I was standing in the parking lot because we were doing the whole park, and this couple come up with their child, and they said, can you tell me where the balls are? I go, you take 10 steps that way and look over. I think they thought it was going to, they were from Oregon, and they thought it was going to be like, you know, a fall type of falls. Yeah. Molten Falls is just falls in the river.
Yeah.
So it's different. Anyway, they were very silly.
Well, and then to caveat off of the larger plan out for the parking there, just preparing for this summer rush. So we can get rid of all that awful police tape and all those cones to force people to use the parking lots and not the side of the road when it gets overcrowded.
Yeah, for sure. It's an issue.
So I would jump in that we did last fall when we were doing the construction project, we did get really great cooperation from the sheriff's office for emphasis patrols up there. And I anticipate that continuing beyond the construction work. It's been a challenge in the past to connect with the sheriff's department, but we do have a what appears to be a more dedicated liaison with the sheriff's department, and I'm hoping that those enforcement things like parking on the road and blocking people's driveways. I'm hoping we can continue to work on that. I believe we even towed some cars last fall.
There was a letter in the paper. Got it.
Yeah, and that gets out, and people will consider not doing those things in the future. There's a particularly important spot where our emergency crews who have to respond there, they need access to, and that's where the towing occurred, the towing I'm aware of.
Yeah, I know.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dan, you got anything else?
No, thank you, sir. Thanks, team.
All right. Let's go home.
Okay.
Thanks, sir.
Good meeting
you, everybody. Good job.
Only thing is, hi, Dave. So, if you feel like you know if you're going to be here, you're not in this. You already know what was reasonable.
Thank you.